This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The UN Human Rights Office is appealing for $253 million to pay for projects to stop growing xenophobia, racial and religious discrimination, and other violations from spreading around the world.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details coming up. Also, Britain's envoy for the Horn of Africa says immediate humanitarian action is needed to save the lives of hundreds of thousands of people in Somalia. And aid agencies have just 18 months to deal with the humanitarian crisis caused by the Boko Haram insurgency. We'll have these stories, lots more, ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the former top UN envoy for Somalia is warning that unless immediate action is taken, hundreds of thousands of people in Somalia may die or be near death by the month of May. Nicholas Kay is now Britain's envoy for the Horn of Africa. He says his country is deeply concerned by the famine warning in Somalia and that Britain is organizing a conference on Somalia. The Associated Press quotes Kay as saying action must be taken before the May conference in London. The Famine Early Warning Systems Network warned this month that 3 million people in Somalia face crisis as well as emergency acute food security. Somalia, like many countries in Africa, is facing drought. That follows poor and erratic rainfall last year due to the El Niño weather event. Parts of Somalia fell into famine in 2010 and 2011, mainly because aid could not reach those in need due to insecurity. Thousands reportedly died. The UN is warning that aid agencies have just 18 months to deal with the humanitarian crisis caused by the Boko Haram insurgency. Otherwise, it says, the consequences will be felt for years to come. The AFP reports that the humanitarian coordinator for Nigeria, Edward Calone, says there's a very short window of opportunity. The insurgency, which began in 2009, has left at least 20,000 dead and displaced millions of people in Nigeria and neighboring countries. Norway is hosting an aid conference next week to deal with the crisis that's affected Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. Famine-like conditions are reported in some of the makeshift camps for the displaced. The UN Human Rights Office is appealing for $253 million to pay for projects to stop xenophobia, racial and religious discrimination from spreading around the world. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
$253 million may sound like a lot of money, and the appeal is the most ambitious ever launched by the UN Human Rights Office. But this money represents only 3% of the overall UN budget. Human rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says the sum requested is only a pittance, considering human rights is one of the three pillars of the United Nations, along with peace and security. She tells VOA, the world is in a perilous state and the situation of human rights globally is dire. She says conflicts have always existed, but that what is new and worrisome is the erosion of human rights values, laws, and principles that were put together after World War II.
There were human rights laws and principles that we took for granted, that states voluntarily signed on to, that are now being questioned, that are being reopened, and in some cases that are being overturned. This is really the worrying part of the state of the world's human rights today.
The agency's appeal comes at a time of great financial uncertainty. The United States has been the largest donor to the United Nations, as well as the OHCHR. The Trump administration, however, has indicated that it may cut funding to the UN. Shamdasani agrees this is of potential concern, but notes the United States has played a leadership role since the days of the League of Nations, and her office is counting on that role continuing.
Of course, recently there has have been some alarming rhetoric and even some alarming steps that have been taken that appear to be causing an erosion of these values. However, at the same time, we've seen quite an inspirational groundswell of defense of human rights.
Shamdasani says the appeal will support hard-hitting investigations into rights violations committed in places such as Bangladesh, South Sudan, and Syria. She says money will be used to train government, judicial, and political officials about human rights principles. This, she adds, will help alleviate some of the suffering of thousands of people victimized by torture, arbitrary arrests, disappearances, and other abuse. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The budget minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo has cast doubt on whether his country will be able to pay for elections this year. His statement has sparked concern, as delaying the polls last year led to violent unrest. William Klaus has more from Kinshasa.
DRC budget minister Pierre Kangudia gave reporters the news on Wednesday.
1,8 milliard avec le budget que nous avons cette année.
He said it will not be possible to disperse $1.8 billion from this year's budget to organize elections in 2017. That hardly comes as a surprise. Total government spending for 2017 is expected to be around $5.2 billion. According to the most recent budget submitted to the National Assembly, which has yet to approve a public spending plan for this year. The budget minister's words, however, have angered the opposition. A deal signed on New Year's Eve with the ruling alliance stipulates that some of the nationwide polls postponed from last year should take place in late 2017, including the presidential election. VOA spoke to Deli Sasanga, a signatory of the agreement from the opposition. He said the minister's declaration demonstrates the government is going down a path completely different to that of organizing elections. He says the government must leave to be replaced by a responsible one capable of taking the country to elections. The president of the Electoral Commission, known as CENI, cited the $1.8 billion figure in early December when he presented the budget to cover the electoral process. That includes compiling a completely new voter list, an initiative launched last August, as well as holding presidential, parliamentary and local polls in this vast and poorly connected country. Delaying last year's elections has allowed President Joseph Kabila to stay in office beyond his constitutional two-term limit. The opposition says that was, and remains, Kabila's intention. But the DRC budget minister said that while the government is unable to deliver $1.8 billion to the CENI, that does not mean there will not be elections this year. The New Year's Eve agreement urges the government to mobilise resources both internally and from the international community. But there is another hurdle. The deal also calls for the installation of a new national unity government, led by a prime minister from the opposition. 6 weeks later, that has not happened. The details still have not been sorted out. On Thursday, the African Union, European Union, United Nations, and International Organization of the Francophonie released a joint statement expressing concern about the delay and calling on the signatories to redouble their efforts for DRC elections. William Klaus for VOA News, Kinshasa.
Migrants continue to make the perilous sea journey from Libya to Italy, and many have died along the way. The European Border Control Agency, Frontex, says migrant deaths reached record levels in 2016. The official figure for last year was nearly 4,600, but the actual number is probably much higher because of many unreported boat tragedies. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following these and other developments regarding the migrant flows to Europe from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
Well, this is a report, a risk analysis by Frontex, and they not only noted that migrant deaths have risen to a record level on the Mediterranean, but they're very concerned that the numbers this year, people ready to leave Libya for Italy, could be as high as last year, and that would be around 180,000 migrants in 2017. Frontex is not only concerned about the migrant deaths, the organisation says that smugglers may even be bringing about disasters and mass drownings because the rescue boats are so close to shore. They're pushing people out offshore, assuming that they're going to be rescued and not really caring if they are or they're not.
What is Frontex trying to do about this?
Well, Frontex has been working with individual governments to try and not only send more rescue ships close to Libya, but trying to support the Libyan Coast Guard so that it can do more of the work monitoring its own coastline. The Frontex report says smugglers have become more reckless and more bold in what they're doing and really pushing these boats right out there where they believe that the rescue boats are going to intercept. And the dangerous crossings on these overloaded vessels have been organised well in advance and are continuing to happen, as we know, through the winter months. And it seems that the search and rescue operations may unintentionally be helping these criminals to achieve their objectives and continue to run very successful criminal businesses by taking advantage of those migrants.
Now let's move on to another aspect of the migrant story. We hear that some mayors in southern Italy are not putting out the welcome mat for these migrants. Is that right?
That's right. Two towns in the Basilicata region, south of Naples, have tried to stop migrants from being located in their towns. One mayor of a town called Cepaloni said he would not accept migrants under any circumstances. Raffaele Scarinzi, the mayor of another town called Vitulano, has ordered bags of sand to be dumped in the streets to block any new arrivals from coming to his town. He says that he's currently housing 30 migrants and he doesn't want any more because he says there are not enough facilities. Even seen some complaints in Lombardy, the area surrounding Milan, because the Italian government is trying to distribute more migrants across the country, and that area is complaining that it's already hosting more than 20,000 migrants in that region. So it's still a very big issue in Italy. It's going to become more of a political issue, particularly because the economy is very weak, unemployment is very high, and people are very threatened by the influx of migrants that we're seeing.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. Eighteen past the hour, you're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe celebrates his 93rd birthday on February 21st. Each year, the day is used to celebrate his leadership and his achievements. The events marking Mugabe's birthday are often expensive. Meanwhile, critics say the country's economy continues to decline. Kudze Zivanvashi has the story.
Mugabe will be the guest of honor at his annual birthday party entitled the 21st February Movement. The Youth League of the ruling ZANU-PF party is organizing the celebrations. Its leader, Kodzai Chipanga, recently described the planning process.
Preparations of the event are at an advanced stage, with the Youth League national executive and provincial executives deployed to various preparatory committees. Mobilization of people and material is progressing well.
Last year, the celebrations were held in the drought-stricken Masingo area, located southeast of the country. The official theme of the event was youth celebrating an African icon through enhanced productivity. Chipanga sheds more light on the venue of this year's celebrations.
The ZANU-PF Youth League, the organizers of the 21st February Movement celebrations, shall host the 21st February Movement at Rhodes Preparatory School in Matopo District, Matabeleland South Province, on the 25th of February 2017. The theme of the event shall be advised in due course.
Each year, individuals and organizations often contribute generously as a sign of their loyalty to President Mugabe. Chipanga named several of the events leading up to his birthday.
On the 17th of February 2017, we'll be having our national fundraising dinner at Rainbow Towers, all traditional and new sponsors are welcome to attend this event. As our preferred way of acknowledging His Excellency and the First Secretary Cobra Darajim Mugabe's untouchable achievements and His Excellency's unwavering commitment to the people of Zimbabwe and Africa at large, the youth in particular, the Youth League, shall have a national cleanup campaign on the 22nd of February 2017.
ZANU-PF Youth League has been calling for Mugabe's birthday to be declared a public holiday, along with renaming Harare International Airport in his honor. Chipanga explains the effort being made to achieve these goals.
On the issue of the government declaring 21st February as a public holiday, we have submitted our request as young people to the relevant authorities. They've since communicated to us that they are still working on that, and we believe very soon we'll be getting a favorable response. On the renaming of Harare International Airport, yes, we are not going back on that one. And we are glad to advise you that the Minister of Transport, who is the responsible minister, is now at an advanced stage as far as plans to rename our airport is concerned.
While preparations are underway, most critics share the view the celebrations will strain the declining economy. Economist Vince Musewe explains.
This country has got endless problems for a president to be more interested in his birthday. But are we surprised? No, I don't think so. Mugabe has demonstrated to us that he doesn't care about the well-being of Zimbabweans. His only interest is to stay in power and to ensure that he wins the 2018 election. This country is going to the dogs, and there is absolutely no reason why someone should be celebrating.
It is vampire behavior that the president of a dysfunctional economy can spend over $1 million on a day that simply for the fact that he was born that day and no other reason. The day he was born is a day we feel created most of our problem, and we are actually in mourning, and we should be wearing black on that day for the suffering that he has caused to this country.
Meanwhile, Zimbabwean activists have been running a campaign called 21 Days of Activism, calling upon the president to address some of the country's major challenges before he eats his cake. Some activists say they will stage a protest on the day of the celebrations. Some say Mugabe's 93rd birthday will add fuel to his critics who continue to question his ability to lead the nation. He is expected to contest for another term in office in the year 2018.
This is Kudzai Zinawashe, reporting for Voice of America from Harare.
And experts meeting in Harare have ended their three-day meeting on the army worm invasion that's destroying crops in at least 7 African countries. 16 East and Southern African countries have agreed on urgent plans of action to manage crop pests as well as avian flu. A new study by the Rights and Resources Institute reveals the main causes of land conflict in Africa can be found in competition for natural resources. The Institute is a global coalition advocating for forest land and resource rights of indigenous people. VOA's Kim Lewis reports from Washington.
The research was released at a recent event in Dakar, Senegal, that included leaders of 3 national land commissions from Kenya, Liberia, and Senegal. Also on hand were government officials, local community leaders, indigenous peoples organizations, and investment organizations. Andy White is coordinator of the Rights and Resources Institute. He was also one of the panelists who presented the conflict study.
I think one of the biggest findings was just the increase in conflict around land rights across Africa. We suspected that was true. We did not have the numbers to demonstrate the extent of the conflicts and the nature of conflicts. So that was one of the most important findings. Another one was regarding the nature of conflicts, and that is the vast majority are around dislocation, relocation, eviction, rather than compensation. That finding was not a surprise to communities, but it was a surprise to investors and governments.
White said the surprise stems from the conventional thinking of investors who focus on how much money they have to pay those living on the land to get them to sell. However, the study found that many African landowners do not want to give up their land. Women owners in particular value their property and see it as part of their future. As a result, they are forcibly removed from their land rather than being compensated for it, causing conflict.
I think one of the reactions from civil society was that this report gives you more reason for the urgency that they've felt for governments to act and act more quickly. I think there's a general sense from civil society that it is a crisis. Governments are not acting fast enough in passing laws and implementing laws, and that there's a built-up frustration. And there's a real sense that if governments don't get on with it, there will be more conflict.
White emphasized that conflict causes political disruptions, the crossing of borders, refugees, and economic instability. He said African government leaders that attended the event agreed that there is a sense of urgency and land conflict is a problem that will require a consensus of all cross-sectors to help solve. He said understanding African communities is the first step in trying to solve African land conflicts.
I've been surprised to see the emergence of some consensus, civil society, private sector leaders, investors, and then the government. One point of consensus, I think, that's emerging is the urgency of mapping customary land use. Most parts of Africa still don't know where communities historically live and how they use the land. Some 80% of the African continent, the landmass, has been customarily owned and used. Roughly 10% is now formally recognized as community land. That indicates a huge gap between the customary use and what's recognized. And so just getting a better sense of where communities are and how they use those lands is step number one.
White highlights there are a number of promising initiatives now underway that are helping communities to map their land, which in turn helps ease transactions with private investors and governments.
For example, we were in Cameroon visiting the Yele community in southern Cameroon. People that we used to call pygmies were supported by the Tenga facility to map their customary use of forest. And where they're mapping their rights, it was in a forest area that just several years ago had been given by the government of Cameroon to a rubber plantation. And the government of Cameroon had made the claim or asserted in the contract that the forest was empty. And, of course, it's not empty. And so these mapping tools are helping people. So that's a very big step forward.
White says the mapping of land is a huge step forward in resolving land conflicts because it gives indigenous people a voice, particularly in the negotiation process. African governments and investors attending the event in Dakar support mapping. Open dialogue and the inclusion of women were also topics that emerged as being part of the solution to land conflicts. White said there was a consensus among investors, governments, and local leaders that women should be a part of shaping the future of land rights and business models in Africa. I'm Kim Lewis, VOA News.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.